week I'm going to speak about starts with a standard picture of the phase diagram. Then I will say a few words about lattice formulations and the fermion doubling problem. Shortly discuss the most important Monte Carlo techniques. In the second part of my talk, I show you some physical results. At the annual lattice conferences, there are about 50 or more thermodynamics contributions. I have to select a few of them, and this selection merely reflects my preferences. I'm going to speak about lattice results and LT equal 4. LT is the temporal extension of the lattice, and as we will see, the larger the temporal extension is, the closer you are to the continuum limit. These applications are mostly concentrated for mu equals 0. May I get another laser pointer? Doesn't work. Lattice then and lattice results at 4 and 6, which is the equation of state, and then lattice results at LT equal 4, 6, 8, and up to 10, which gives you the nature of the transition and also the transition temperature. The usual order to discuss these issues is the other way around, because it's easy, that's more difficult, and that's really a very difficult one. But I'm going to discuss these issues in the opposite direction just to emphasize how we approach the continuum limit. On the left-hand side, you see the standard and well-known phase diagram of QCD at zero chemical potential, finite temperature on the light quark mass and strange quark mass plane. The purple regions are first-order phase transitions, the thick lines are second-order phase transitions, and the region between represents a crossover. Actually, there is very little rigorous lattice result about this phase diagram. The only exception is perhaps this point D, infinitely heavy quark masses, the quenched approximation. I will show you how to locate, anyhow, the physical point on this phase diagram. We know, though there are no rigorous lattice results, but good theoretical arguments for that, that the massless two-flavor QCD at mu equals 0 has a second-order phase transition, and the massless three-flavor QCD, zero chemical potential, has a first-order phase transition. As I mentioned, I will discuss the physical point with two light quarks and one heavier strange quark with physical quark masses and mu equals 0, and I will show you that it is in the crossover region. There are theoretical arguments and model calculations that the same theory at T equals 0, but at non-vanishing chemical potential, has a first-order phase transition. This brings me to the right-hand side, where I show you the phase diagram of the physical quark content on the chemical potential temperature plane. As we have seen, the transition at zero chemical potential is a crossover, and if we believe that first-order phase transition feature and connect this crossover with the first transition, then we end up with a second-order phase transition at critical point E at some non-vanishing chemical potential and temperature. Let me fix my notation. I'm using a lattice. The fermionic fields, anti-commuting fermionic fields, are living on the sides of the lattice, and the gluon fields, A mu, are used as link variables, which are given by the exponentiated integral of the A mu field. The basic object what we are using is the so-called plaquette, which is the product of four of these link variables around an elementary plaquette. The action has a gauge part and a fermionic part. The gauge part is up to some constant, is proportional to the plaquette, which I just defined. And if you want to calculate on a lattice the fermionic action, the naive differentiating scheme gives you something, fermionic fields on lattice sizes and on the neighboring lattice sizes. If you include, in addition, the gauge fields, that means that you sandwich between the neighboring lattice sizes the link variable. So far, so good. The quantity what we want to calculate is the partition function, which is an integral over the gauge fields, fermionic fields, and the Euclidean action. The Euclidean action has gauge coupling in it as parameter g. The quark mass is mi. It might contain the chemical potential mu, or might not. And it has a finite volume, and the temperature, the finite temperature, is given by the temporal lattice extension. T is 1 over nt times a. Our goal is to go to the continuum limit. That means we want to send the lattice spacing to 0. And all the way, when we send the a to 0, we want to keep the physical spectrum constant. I will speak about that. If you fix, or you want to fix the temperature in physical units, and you want to send A to 0, that means that NT has to go to infinity. So the continuum limit at fixed temperature, let's say about the transition temperature, means that NT goes to infinity. It's easy to say. Unfortunately, the CPU requirements grows like NT to the 13, and just to say, a real example I will discuss later on, if you want to use nt equal 10 instead of nt equal 6, I emphasize again, these are real examples I will discuss later on, you need 50 to 100 times more CPU power. Let me say a few words about the actions. Similarly to the integral, to a one-dimensional integral, the action is a four-dimensional integral. And for a one-dimensional integral, you know that the Simpson rule is better than the most straightforward way to calculate the integral. So there are also ways to calculate the integral in a more and more improved manner. This is called the improvement program, and there is a whole zoo of improved actions from flick to clover, tadpole, hyper-improved, and even over-improved improvement. The only reason why we do, we want to reach the continuum limit earlier. Let me show you a result by Hallakarsh and Sturm, where they calculated the free energy, the pressure, free energy density, or the pressure of the infinitely high temperature non-interacting quark gluon glass. And they compared it at finite temporal extension to the continuum result. And here that's what you see. As you increase the temporal extension and t, the result, the ratio is getting closer and closer to 1. This is the standard action. This is the so-called P4 action they are using. And this is the Naïk action. These extrapolations are usually done in the scaling regime as a function of 1 over nt squared. So I plot the same result as 1 over nt squared. And that's what you see for the P4, for the Naïk, and for the standard action. And as you see, if you just use 4 and 6 for this very easy question, non-interacting gas, 4 and 6 from the standard action undershoots, from the P4 action also undershoots. And with the Naïk action, you might have the fake impression that you are already close to the continuum limit because the two results are very close to each other. Nevertheless, it's extrapolating even into the wrong direction. I think it's fair to say that if you look at that plot, that the continuum extrapolation using nt and nt plus 2 from the standard action might be better than using just nt with an improved action. Absolutely. That's just an illustration. So it's a whole trade-off. Some actions can be very good in the infinitely high temperature non-interacting limit, but they might be not as good when we determine the spectrum. So you're absolutely right. So let me come to the question of my chairman, fermion doubling. The naive discretization of the massless Dirac action gives a propagator which has 16 zeros within the Brillouin cell, in d dimensions 2 to the d, and these zeros are at p mu a equals 0, or pi, and the inclusion of the gauge fields does not solve this problem. There are three ways to treat them. Solution is perhaps a bit exaggerated. Three ways to treat this problem. One of them is the spin diagonalization. They have the name Stagart fermions. introduced by Kogut and Susskind. They are cheap, but they have disadvantages. For instance, the translation invariance is 2a, and they have inherently four flavors, or how they call it these days, tastes, which lead to the so-called routing procedure and a non-locality of the action. I will say a few more words about that. Another very popular fix is the Wilson fix. You add irrelevant operators, which moves the doubler mass to infinity. This is a more expensive procedure, and the chirosymmetry is explicitly broken. And the third solution, the best one, of the so-called chiral fermions, fermions which fulfill the Ginzburg-Wilson relation. They have very nice theoretical properties, but they are very expensive, and they have very little result on dynamical thermodynamics with chiral fermions. The vast majority of the QCD thermodynamics on the lattice is done by staggered fermions. In this staggered fermionism, we introduce a gamma x, which is given here, and psi x is expressed by the chi fields. And if you write the action with the use of these chi fields, the action turns out to be diagonal. These eta factors here are phase factors, and they depend only on the site index. So you can essentially drop the spin index on chi, and only the color freedom remains. That means that you can reduce the original degeneracy by a factor of four. But altogether, four flavors or four tastes remain for every physical flavor. That means you have a fourfold staggered degeneracy. The advantage of this formulation that it is cheaper, a factor of four cheaper, in some cases it is even more, in some cases it's somewhat less. But as you see, the structure of eta, this phase factor, tells us that the translation invariance is modulo 2a instead of a. And in addition, the gauge interaction breaks the taste symmetry. Yeah.
So it's not just a numerical matrix, or depends on x, or?
Yeah. But that's a trivial dependence on x, as you see.
Yeah, but what was gamma 1x, it's moving matrix from point to point, or?
That's from point to point. X is a natural number, yeah? So you just make the power of that natural number, and then adds up, all together, if you add up, you just get these phase factors. So what are the consequences of this fourfold degeneracy? The real calculations need less than four flavors. We need two light flavors and one strange. And if you want to have twice as many fermions, you usually take the square of the fermionic determinant. So the idea, if you want to have half as many fermions, then you take the square root of the determinant. Or if you just want to have one fermion, you take the fourth root. And that's shown here. The determinant is on the fractional power nf over 4. So this is the so-called routing procedure. And it is shown that this leads to non-locality for any lattice spacing, any non-vanishing lattice spacing. This might spoil universality, or it might be restored in the continuum limit, and there is a lively discussion whether the staggered fermions are just, whether they are good, bad, or just ugly, and Mike Kreutz is here, and he might say a few words. Yes, so it's a square root for the light quark masses, and the fourth root. Well, I just wanted to illustrate that if you have NF something, that's how you define the functional integral. Let me emphasize that all large-scale thermodynamics projects are using the staggered fermions. And even more, the MILC, which is a large US collaboration, also uses the staggered fermions to sort T equal zero calculations. We have a taste violation, as I mentioned, due to the inclusion of the gauge fields, which disappears when we approach the continuum limit. Here it is an illustration of the Milk collaboration. This is one of the closest lattice to the continuum limit. These are the pion masses as a function of the quark masses. This is the one single Goldstone pion and a whole zoo of the non-Goldstone. The real physical point is somewhere here, and as you see, the taste violation is pretty large. This formulation, the staggered formulation, certainly includes many, perhaps all of the dynamical effects, but it is not proven that they include all of the dynamical effects. So I think it's fair to say that one needs other theoretical cleaner actions too in the future. And this brings me to the simulations, to the techniques which are used. In the Monte Carlo calculations, we are essentially dealing with n-dimensional integrals, which is carried out by important sampling. That means for a pure gauge theory, the integration weight is proportional to the exponent minus Sg, the Euclidean action. This is a probability measure on the phase space of the link variables u and mu. And we are carrying out a Markov process, successive change of the link variables, which we call sweeps. The oldest such a technique is a Metropolis algorithm, and since I'm going to use it for an illustration later on, let me remind you that for a pure gauge, it is very similar. For the Ising model, you take one link variable, you change the old value to a trial value, and accept or reject it with a probability which is given by the minimum of 1 and exponent minus delta Sg. And a single sweep repeats it for every link on the whole lattice. There are more efficient algorithms, such as the heat bath and the over-relaxation. The heat bath updates a single variable according to the correct probability distribution, and the over-relaxation is a very efficient algorithm which has a sort of reflection of the variable, which means that you are moving fast in the configuration space, but due to the reflection, you keep the action as it was before. That means the accept-reject step leads to an exception. But that was the easy part. Dynamical fermions are much more complicated. And we want to generate, for this case, a distribution of gauge, and let me emphasize just gauge configurations, in a Monte Carlo process with weights x minus s, where s contains the whole action, that means also contains the fermionic part. Clearly, you can integrate out the Grassmann variables, which leads to a fermionic determinant. You can re-exponentiate it, and you have an effective action, which is Sg minus trace log the matrix, the fermion matrix. This result then depends exclusively on the gauge field. This is a sort of complete bosonization of the theorem. Of course, this determinant is non-local, and that means that the effective interaction in these bosonized theory is non-local. Most of the calculations with fermionic actions are using microcanonical molecular dynamics evolution, in which we define a fictitious Hamiltonian from the bosonized action with a fictitious momenta p and mu conjugate to u and mu. Here it is. And then you just solve the Hamiltonian equation. The equation is, this formulation is energy conserving. It means it's non-ergodic. But that means that if you want to renew p and mu configurations from a random Gaussian ensemble, you can cure this non-ergodicity. And as I mentioned, almost all present simulations are done with this hybrid Monte Carlo. So let us look at the most expensive part of these calculation, and that was the derivative with respect to the link variable. This is easy, Sg, which might be a plaquette or something similar. But we have here a trace of this derivative and the inverse of the fermion matrix. So you have to calculate the inverse of the fermion matrix, which has a size of V times V, L to the 4 times L to the 4. So if you use a standard Gauss elimination, you end up with L to the 12 arithmetic operations. It's bad. So an important trick is to use, instead of the complete calculation of the inverse and a trace on it, the observation that you can estimate the trace by calculating with random vectors on the left and on the right. For infinitely large volumes, it fluctuates with the relative order of 1 over square root of V, and that's actually the limit what we want to reach. So when we are getting closer and closer to a physical question, we are estimating it better and better. And that means that you don't have to calculate the whole inverse. What you have to calculate is D inverse times Xi, or in other words, you have to solve these linear equations. And there are very good recursive algorithms which need order V operations. The most popular for lattice QCD is the conjugate gradient, CG. It needs 100 to 1,000 steps for that, and each step is order V operation instead of V cubed. And don't forget, V has an order of magnitude a million. So it's a huge gain. Nevertheless, these calculations are still very expensive, so you might use commercial supercomputers or special purpose supercomputers. But interestingly enough, this is a BlueJeans machine, or 8 BlueJeans machines, actually, each of them costs a million or so. But interestingly enough, today, for today, thermodynamics, the most competitive hardware is the video card. You just put it into your PCs for your kids. They are high-end video cards, cost about $500. They are not used by any groups, but they are group, any other groups, but they are good. And they are not just games. Let me emphasize that QCD thermodynamics and the results I'm going to present, which are perhaps one of the most CPU-intensive lattice results ever done, were largely done on 140 of those video cards. Before I show you the results, let me make a remark at finite chemical potential. So if you look at the discretization of the fermionic field, and you want to include the chemical potential, which is nothing else but the fourth component of an imaginary constant vector potential, means that the fermionic part remains a bilinear expression after inclusion of the chemical potential, and the Euclidean partition function can be expressed exactly the same way as we did a few transparency before. The only problem that the determinant with these imaginary vector potential picks up an imaginary part. That means that in the Metropolis step, we have to tell the minimum of 1 and an imaginary number. And it's not possible. There is no probability interpretation for complex fates. There is no Monte Carlo method for non-vanishing chemical potential. And that blocked, that fact blocked somehow the development of finite chemical potential results for 20 years or so. 5 years ago, a method was suggested, and afterwards a few other methods were suggested too. And let me say a few words about that. So this is the partition function which we want to calculate with the gauge action and the fermionic determinant. And I rewrite it in a trivial way. I take it at a different gauge coupling, beta is 6 over g squared, a different mass, and mu equals 0. And then for correcting them, I take the difference between the two gauge actions and the ratio of the determinants. And the observation is that you can use the red line for the integration measure for generating the field configurations in the Monte Carlo, and the curly bracket can be measured on each configuration, and they can be used as weights. That means simultaneously changing several parameters, you will have a better overlap. I will show you what I mean by overlap. For instance, transition configurations are mapped to transition ones, and you can calculate essentially any observable just by using these weight functions given in the curly bracket. In that sense, you can calculate observables at non-vanishing chemical potentials, such as susceptibilities. Here is a cartoon of the method with a comparison of a previous method which was advocated before these new methods appeared, but it's instructive to look at that for a second. So this old method was the Glasgow method, and if you imagine the chemical potential temperature plane, this method was deep in the hadronic phase, collected millions of configurations, and then tried to re-weight it with different weights all the way along to the transition line and to the other side of the transition line. Clearly, configurations which are deep in the hadronic phase cannot say anything about configurations, typical configurations, which are on the other side of the transition line. Instead of that, the new method heats the system up to the transition point where you have a mixture of coagulum plasma and hadronic phases, and then changes T and mu simultaneously in a way that the mixture remains roughly half and half. And that's why it works. You can get results on that. For instance, this is the temperature chemical potential plane. Here you have a hadronic phase, coagulum plasma. Between them, a crossover. After a while, you have an endpoint, after which you have a first-order phase transition. You can give numbers to the temperature and chemical potential and to the curvature. But let me emphasize again that these results are LT equal 4, and what we want to do is approach the continuum limit. There are other techniques. Some of them are related, some of them are pretty independent. One of the methods are the so-called Taylor expansion of the multiparameter re-weighting, which is used by the Bielefeld-Swansea collaboration. They are calculating the partition function exactly the same way, but instead of evaluating the determinant explicitly, they expand it as a function of mu, and that's why it is called a Taylor expansion technique. It's faster than the full technique because Taylor coefficients can be easily calculated. The full determinant is more expensive, but clearly it is only valid for somewhat smaller mu values than the full technique. And as an illustration, let me show you one plot from them. This is the chiral susceptibility as a function of beta. You remember beta tunes the temperature. For mu equals 0, for somewhat larger mu, and even larger mu. And if you locate the susceptibility peak, then you have the peak position as a function of mu, which is given at different temperatures. So that's what it is. As a function of mu, the temperature of the peak position is changing, and in their paper, they put Fodor and Cutts result there, showing quite good agreement with their results, too. As I said, the uncertainties at small t and large mu are getting larger and larger. Yes. That's the next topic. There is a technique, the analytic continuation, which uses the fact that at imaginary chemical potential, you introduce actually a fourth component of a real vector potential. The functional integral doesn't have these complex feature, it doesn't have the sign problem, and then you can directly obtain the beta C imaginary chemical potential transition line. And then you can try analytic continuation to get the physical line. For instance, a susceptibility peak, which is defined by the susceptibility and the peak position. can be determined on finite volume. It is clearly an analytic function of mu I and beta because the volume is finite. And using the implicitly given beta C mu I, one can get the curvature also in the real chemical potential direction. And here is the result. This is the imaginary chemical potential squared beta function for the peak position. And if you do this transformation analytic continuation, that's the temperature chemical potential dependence. The curvature is given here. It is consistent with the other results, and they can even give mass dependence for the NF equals 3 critical endpoint. It is given here. For NF equals 2 plus 1, they get a number which is consistent with 0 and 1.5 sigma. This is non-consistent, 2.5 sigma, but it shows a positive curvature. And in principle, the equation of state can be determined too. As I said, and I have to emphasize it again, all these results were obtained on a single lattice spacing LT equal 4. Another method which goes far away along in the chemical potential is the density of state method. It uses a constraint simulation which forces some observables to have a given value. And this way, configurations with all values of the observable are present. That means that the overlap problem is not a serious problem anymore. So for any observables, you can use these density of states to calculate the expectation value of the observable. The density of state is defined simply by the integral of du and fixing one variable to its value. There are possible choices for this phi. It can be the plaquette, it can be complex phase, or it can be the quark number density. Unfortunately, none of these attempts worked for real QCD, and we made a choice to take phi equals pi for the plaquette. G in this separation is the absolute value of the determinant with the Boltzmann weight of the gauge action, and F is the separation of the phase factor. It's an expensive calculation, but you get a nice phase diagram on four flavors staggered QCD, four because you wanted to avoid a routing problem. And here you have the phase diagram on the chemical potential temperature plane. And you see even a triple point around 300 MeV quark chemical potential and 135 MeV temperature, which is about 60 MeV higher than the lowest temperature you can reach on LT equals 6 lattices, because the lowest temperature is something like 73 MeV on LT equals 6 if you fix the scale by m rho. And in order to avoid any pion mass problem, we checked that changing the pion, the quark mass within a factor of 2, these points are not really moving. Again, these are just techniques which show that QCD at finite chemical potentials can be treated in some way. But they are very far from the continuum limit. So let us go one step towards the continuum limit, and let me say a few words about the equation of state. The energy density and the pressure can be obtained from the partition function by the well-known expressions. But when you change A, then you simultaneously change the temperature and the volume, and the particularly useful quantity is epsilon minus 3p. Actually, the pressure for a large homogeneous system is just proportional to the logarithm of the partition function, but it's very difficult to calculate the partition function itself. It's easier to calculate the derivatives of the partition function. So what you are doing, you calculate the derivatives and then integrate it again. And on this path, you want to go on the line of constant physics, That means you want to keep the physical spectrum all along the integration path the same. There is a need for renormalization. You want to have pressure at t equals 0 to be 0. That means you need both t non-equal 0 simulations for which nt is much smaller than ns, and t equals 0 simulations for which nt is roughly ns or slightly larger. And there is a necessity to make a subtraction pt over t to the 4 minus p0 over t to the 4. And this subtraction is getting more and more difficult when you go closer and closer to the continuum limit. Actually, this needs an additional nt to the 4 factor in the calculation. That's why thermodynamic calculations are more expensive than t equals 0 calculation, and that's how you get a 1 over 8 to the 13 factor in the CPU cost for this case. I think it's fair to say that today nt equals 4 is easy, nt equals 6 is difficult, and nt equals 8 is a real challenge. I'll show you a few previous lattice results on the equation of state. These are the Japanese group with Wilson fermions. These calculations are and were slower, and they have large quark masses and relatively large statistical errors too. This is the result of the Mill collaboration with Stagart fermions, and for a long time the mostly used result was Karsh, Larman, and Peikert, where they give the equation of state as a function of temperature. There are several ongoing projects. Perhaps the largest one is the Bielefeld, Brookhaven, Columbia, Riken collaboration, and they try to move from these nt equal 4 result to nt equal 4 and 6. We also have some results on nt equal 4 and 6, and this plot shows our results, nt equal 4 and nt equal 6, for the pressure as a function of t over tc. And that's the preliminary result of the Bielefeld, Brookhaven, Riken collaboration, for instance, epsilon minus 3p. The black dots are the 6 results, and the blue squares are the 4 results. Who? We or the Brook? Well, these are statistical errors, including some of the systematic error due to the integration procedure. If you repeat the same action with the same action, then you will have the same curve. Yeah. No, no, no. Mostly, most importantly, then that's the message, that they might look nice, a nice scaling, but as we will see, scaling is not an easy issue. And I think that even in this case, an nt equal 8 is at least an nt equal 8 is needed to give a final answer to that question. And that brings me to issues which are studied in more detail when we approach the continuum limit, namely the nature of the transition and the transition temperature itself. So let me start with the nature of the QCD transition. Those who are interested in the details can find them in this reference. The nature of the transition was published in the proper journal in Nature. So they use the semantic improved gauge action and a Stout improved fermionic action. We fixed the quark masses to their physical quark masses. That means the pion was 140 and the kN was 500 MeV. And we looked at the chiral susceptibility. For a finite system, you can never tell whether it's a first order phase transition or a second order phase transition or a crossover. The way to do that is to increase the volume and look whether it gets more and more singular. And that's what we studied. For instance, for a first-order phase transition, the peak position of the susceptibility should scale proportional to the volume, and the width of the peak should scale with the inverse of the volume. For a crossover, after you reach the large enough volume, the peak width and the peak height should be constant. Sorry. Well, that's a complicated question. It has several issues in it. So Stagart fermions are cheaper, as I said. The Stout improvement makes it even three times more better. And then those video cards are very efficient. And you pick up a factor of three here, a factor of five there, a factor of 10 there, and you end up with a result that you can simulate at physical quark masses. But I think that there are other groups which are almost at physical quark masses, say twice the physical quark mass are also done by other groups. Well, I compared it with finite. Guy, I compared it with finite temperature simulations, and even there, the other groups are using slightly larger quark masses. So the question was justified in that sense. No, in vacuum at t equals zero, we don't use that. We use Cairo perturbation theory to calculate different quantities. You have long autocorrelation time at the around the transition temperature. I go on, yeah? So coming back to the, did I answer your questions, Keio? Not really. Okay, so let's go back to the finite volume scaling, to the finite volume scaling. So here I show you the susceptibility peak on 4 times 12 cubed, 4 times 16 cubed, 4 times 24 cubed. This lattice is 8 times larger, the volume, than this lattice, and if it refers to the phase transition, then the peak should be 8 times higher. It is obviously not. So on that lattice spacing, the transition is a crossover. If you take 6 as a temporal extension, it is still a crossover. Of course, it's very hard to believe that you have a series which says crossover, 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 and you believe that all the way to the continuum limit, it will be the same. It can just switch. So you have to answer the question, how can you show that the phase transition or the transition is a crossover all the way along the continuum? For that, you have to compare different lattice spacings. So what we are going to do, we will calculate the peak of the susceptibility at a given physical volume all the way to the continuum. That means you're getting more and more lattice spacing in a given physical volume. And for those continuum results for 3 different volumes, we will carry out a finite volume scaling. So susceptibility for fixed physical volumes in the continuum, and then finite scaling analysis of the continuum extrapolated values. For that, you have to compare quantities at different lattice spacing. You have to renormalize, but it can be done similarly as it is done for the free energy. You make this subtraction, you define the renormalized susceptibility by taking the derivative with respect to the renormalized mass, and you observe that such combinations, n squared, d squared, dm squared, doesn't have the renormalization factor anymore, so you can directly study this quantity. And here is the result. We have done the finite case study of the continuum extrapolated susceptibility peaks. Let me emphasize that the NT equal 4 result was completely off. So in these extrapolation, you could use only the 6, 8, and a 10. And here is a susceptibility peak, the height of the susceptibility peak, actually the inverse of it, appropriately normalized, and here is the inverse of the volume, again appropriately normalized. The infinite volume limit is this limit, and the infinitely high peak position or height of the peak is this limit. So for a first order phase transition, you will have a V scaling, which goes along this line. For instance, a second order phase transition in the O4 universality class would mean this line. Instead of that, you see the physical values somewhere there, and they show a completely different behavior. If they just suggest that the system has a crossover and not a phase transition, the chance probability that it is just a statistical fluctuation is astronomically small. So the result is obtained in the continuum with physical quark masses in Staggered QCD. Shouldn't forget the problems with Staggered QCD. But the result is that the QCD transition at mu equals zero is an analytic crossover. If you remember to my first plot, that means, in the introduction, we located the physical point in this yellow region. Well, that's just a cartoon. I will show you how sharp it is. Yeah? So I'm now going to go to this point, to this plot. We know that it is a crossover here, and I'm going to locate the position of this point and also tell the answer how sharp or how broad it is. So let us calculate the transition temperature. For that, again, you need T equals zero and T larger than zero simulations. T equals zero is needed to set the physical scale and locate the physical point. The physical point can be located in this parameter space by fixing the pion mass and the kaon mass. But there are several possibilities for the third quantity to fix the scale. It can be the string tension, which was used in earlier lattice thermodynamic studies, but it's a non-existing quantity in full QCD, the string breaks. Another very popular quantity to fix the scale uses the static quark potential at intermediate distances. This is the so-called R naught, which is defined at R naught squared times the force is 1.65, and it gives you roughly 0.5 Fermi. Unfortunately, there is no direct experiment which can measure the force at 0.5 Fermi. So there is an intermediate step if you want to get the physical value for that. So instead of these quantities, we use something which is directly measurable, and that was the kaon decay constant. And that means that all other quantities, such as R naught, F pi, or mk star, are predictions then in this calculation. And for T larger than zero, we have seen that we have a crossover, and that means that different quantities will give you different transition temperatures. They are well defined by different. So the chiral susceptibility can be one quantity, the quark number susceptibility, or the Polyakov loop, and they will all give most probably different numbers. And since yesterday we already studied the physics of water, let me illustrate this phenomenon with water. So there are physicists who are not just shaking the water, but boiling it, and that's what they found. So this is the pressure temperature diagram of water, and up to 650 Kelvin, you have a first order phase transition. And if you look for different quantities, such as the heat capacity or the jump of the density, they will give you the same transition temperature. Then you have a critical point, and if you heat the water even to higher temperatures, then you see that two definitions for the transition temperature, namely the most singular point of the density or the largest value of the heat capacity, simply gives you different transition temperatures. So that's what we expect also in QCD. The different quantities give well-defined but different numbers for the transition temperatures. And here they are. Here is the chiral susceptibility, the quark number susceptibility, and the Poiré-Yerkes loop. The red curves are obtained at nt equals 4. The blue, nt equals 6. The green, nt equals 8. And the purple, nt equals 10. The chiral susceptibility gives you a transition temperature, which is 151 MeV. But the real surprise for me was that you have a broad transition. This curve, which is the shaded curve, represents the continuum extrapolation, has a width of 28 MeV. For the quark number susceptibility, the transition temperature is somewhat larger, but they are 5 sigma away from each other, and the width is even larger, about 40 MeV, and roughly the same for the Poiré-Yerkes loop. Actually, I wanted to close now and come to my conclusion, but a dozen or so people asked me about the discrepancy between our result and the result of the Bielefeld, Brookhaven, Columbia, Rican people. It's not polite to comment on them because they are not here, but due to the interest, let me say a few words on that too. So there is a recent result of the Bielefeld, Brookhaven, Columbia, Rican collaboration, and they determine the transition temperature from the chiral susceptibility and from the Poiré-Yerkes loop. And from both quantities, they obtained 192 MeV, and it contradicts to all results, most particularly for the chiral susceptibility. What are the main differences between the two works? They use only nt equal 4 and 6, and as I said, we used 4, 6, 8, and 10. 10 is 50 times more expensive than 6. But if you just look at the cutoffs, this corresponds to roughly 0.3 Fermi or 0.2 Thermi as a cutoff. Or you want to have it in energy scales, it's 700 MeV or 1 GeV. It's not very large. The use for the scale setting R0 instead of FK, and they haven't done any renormalization for the chiral susceptibility. Yes, that's what I'm going to show on the next slide. Yeah, on the next slide, it's coming. Yeah? So. And the third difference, that they haven't used the renormalized chiral susceptibility, which can explain 10 MeV difference out of the 40. But the majority of the difference remains. The question, what is the reason for this discrepancy? And actually, it's interestingly enough that their very last concluding remark of the paper in the conclusion says that it is desirable to obtain a reliable independent scale setting for the transition temperature from an observable not related to the properties of the static potential. No, they don't. The autocorrelation times is 10 times larger in their case than in our case, and they have trajectory length, which is half as our trajectory length. So just to answering that question, set the scale in a way which is not related to the static potential. So what happens if they used Fk instead of R0, instead of the static potential? So we repeated some of their TQ0 simulations with their action, their algorithm, and we found that all what they did is correct, absolutely correct, but in addition, we determined the Fk on those configurations. And that's what we obtained. These are their published results for the temperature nt equals 4, nt equals 6, and that's the continuum extrapolation as a function of a squared. This is the 192, what they obtained. And since we determined the Fk, we can use Fk to set the scale, and that's what you get on nt equals 4, nt equals 6, and that's what you get in the continuum extrapolation. That means that the continuum extrapolation is inconsistent. That's not surprising. The lattice is pretty coarse. And if you use for our data nt equal 4 and 6, you have the same phenomena. Using R0, you have a transition temperature which is here. Using Fk, you have a transition temperature which is there. They are inconsistent again. What happens if you include nt equal 8 and 10? And that's shown on the right plot. That was 4, 6, 8, and 10 using R0, the static potential, or using Fk, 4, 6, 8, and 10. And they just go to the same value. So I think one possibility, might be wrong, but one possibility to resolve this discrepancy is simply saying that continuum limits from 6, 8, and 10 are consistent, and you cannot take a continuum limit just using nt equal 4 and 6. And this brings me to my conclusion. I studied lattice thermodynamics, and I think that we have already important full results, and we will have many more in the near future. And when I'm saying full, that means really extrapolated to the continuum limit. Such one result is the nature of the transition, which turned out to be an analytic transition. We have seen that there are discrepancies in the determination of TC between the groups, but it will most probably be resolved in the continuum limit. The equation of state still needs continuum extrapolation. And non-vanishing chemical potential results are still quite far from the continuum limit. They are mostly concentrated on nt equals 4. Let me emphasize again that practically all the results are within the staggered formalism, which has these non-locality problem at any non-vanishing lattice spacings. So the basic goal for the future is to go closer to the continuum limit and also to use non-staggered fermions. Thank you very much for your attention. Mu plot. Which one you mean, with the 4 flavor or the 2 plus 1 flavor? Okay. I go back and you tell me, yeah? Okay, that's. I would like to emphasize once more that this is not 135, this is 60 MeV above the lowest temperature you can reach. No, I mean the lowest temperature you can reach is 73 MeV, theoretically. So it's not because I can't go deeper. There's no way to go deeper because the lattice size in the temporary extension is 6. No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that since the lattice extension is 6, there is no way to go below 73 MeV. I interpret this plot much more as a technology improvement to go to chemical potentials which are much higher than it was reached before. No. If you have nt equals 6 and you fix the mass with the room mass, yeah, then you cannot go to temperature equals 0. Your normalization was at temperature equals 0, but not at nt equals 6. Here you can go also smaller temperatures than 73 MeV. The only thing you have to do is to have finer lattice spacing. Okay. That might be true for the infinitely high temperature limit, but definitely not for the T equals zero calculations. And T equals zero calculations are needed to fix the scale. And the reason for that is that taste violation with our action is much more suppressed than in their action. Perhaps I have a transparency even on that. I didn't want to speak about that, but many people asked me, so. Here it is. So if you look at the taste violation, then this is the standard Milk action with nt equals 6. This is the Bielefeld P4 nf equals 3, nt equals 4 for the splitting, for the taste violation, and this is our taste violation. So at t equals 0, the stout improvement is, for many quantities, better. So you're right, in the infinitely large temperature limit, their action is far superior. But at t equals 0, there are better features of air action. But what I have to emphasize all the time, that what you need is at least 3 points to see that you are already in the A-square region. And just using 2 points, you are always on one line.
Shorter scale important for this calculation, and I am thinking about claim we did kind of more than 25 years ago about existence of larger momentum scale in GCT. So you see, it's particularly interesting for me because if we can single out this contribution which comes from shorter distances. From a scale like few GeV, and in the five, what is related to that? You see, because in some sense, once you saw in this picture, I would try to interpret it this way: that those scales are important.
Yeah, the proto mass is one GeV.
No. The point was that I'm referring to was that in blue wall channels. You would have capability scale like 6 GeV or 5 GeV. So in this way, when lattice size, the one you are talking about, that in sense, improved action could miss some kind of non-perturbative pieces. Because you are saying that Sonnier action is thrown at the scale of 1 PM. But there is another component which is thrown at, at 1 piece of the PM, right? Mm-hmm. And my impression is that your pictures in some way.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay.